Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Today's podcast might be the most important work I've ever done. In the episode that follows, I, along with the help of three other gentlemen who will join me as guests today, we will make the case that the shattered backboard dunk is not only the most incredible, yet strangely, the least talked about, most underappreciated moment in all of sports, but it is also the dead center beating heart of the First Ballot Hall of Fame. Nothing is more First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast than a shattered backboard dunk. Today, we're going to figure out which shattered backboard is the best shattered backboard right here on First Ballot. Welcome to First Ballot, the podcast that celebrates the moments in sports that really matter and inducts them into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. This show has been called the world's best throwback sports podcast. Who said it? I said it. I'm your host, Neil, a.k.a. Gotham Coach, the long-lost Gasol brother, the Glass City Cobra, the podcast Jordan Clarkson, half Filipino, half not Filipino. I'm not the biggest Lakers fan. I'm the best Lakers fan. Mr. Not Always Right, but Never Ever Wrong. Coming to you live from the Shaquille O'Neal branded Office Depot, big and tall executive suite desk chair. I'm trying to move fast today. We got a lot to get to. The First Ballot Hall of Fame podcast is brought to you by Ball is Life and the Ball is Life Podcast Network. This podcast available wherever you listen to your favorite pods, but it's all because of the support of Ball is Life. Follow at Ball is Life on all social platforms. Today's episode is going to be different. This is an episode I've long debated doing. I've wanted to do this from the beginning of this show. I finally put the right people together. I think this is what this podcast is supposed to be about. This is a group of people I care about. They are respected. I care what they have to say about things. We are talking about something that's very stupid. Admittedly, in the scope of the world and things that are going on, that we are going to devote, that all of us, gentlemen, are going to devote this time is stupid. That's a dumb thing that we're doing. That said, what we are talking about is also, it's awesome and it's underappreciated. We're going to get into it today. I am convening the first ever First Ballot Hall of Fame voting committee panel. And what is it that we're voting on? Well, that's simple. Today on the show, we will be deciding which shattered backboard dunk goes into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. But you all, our Hall of Fame listeners, you will all decide which one of these shattered backboard dunks is the best. We're going to put this all online. You can vote in some polls over our socials. More on that later. For the time being, follow First Ballot Pod on Twitter and or First Ballot HOF on Instagram. I realize those should be the same. This conversation, if I may add a little bit of weight here, this is at the heart of what this podcast is about. And it's also personally, for all of you listening, this is what my heart sings. This is very important to me, the conversation we're about to have. I'm so excited. Let's get into it. Okay. Our first panelist today appeared on episode 9 of this podcast. He's almost single-handedly responsible for Sean Kemp's Lister Blister being inducted into the First Ballot Hall of Fame. He's one of the founding members of the greatest basketball mixtape outfit working today. Do you hear what I just said? The greatest basketball mixtape outfit working today. He's a friend of the show. He's the NBA social video Andrew Gaze. It's Paul from the legendary Dunk Comp. Let's go. Holy shit, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me back. It's a joy to be back here. Thank you.
And just set the table for us. You are in Australia, and what time is it there?
It is a pleasant 4:30 in the morning.
What a colossal waste of time. What a colossal waste of time.
I wouldn't be anywhere else. Thank you.
Our next panelist appeared on episode 23 of this podcast. He's responsible for finding the angry French woman in the stands on Vince Carter's dunk over Fred Weiss. He's the reason this show is on the Ball's Life Podcast Network. He's the guy I call to check my facts. He's your favorite NBA mixtaper's favorite NBA mixtaper. It's Mr. David Ostrapskis.
Thank you.
DA in the place to be. So glad to have you here, sir. Our last panelist is a senior national NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. Killer sentence. He appeared on episode 39 of this podcast, where he masterfully wove a tapestry of love and passion for the Jeff Van Gundy Alonzo Mourning leg fight that resulted in a first ballot plaque that will hang on our walls of our Hall of Fame forever. He's the host of Divine Intervention, the co-host of No Cap Room Podcast. He's not just your man, Divine. He's our man, Divine. It's Mr. Dan Divine.
Oh, my God. Let's go. Let's go. I'm sorry that it's 4:30 in the morning where you are, but where I am, it's time to do some important work about topics of severity.
I'm so excited to have these four gentlemen assembled to do this very silly thing that we're all going to take so seriously. It's sickening. Can we just out of the gates talk a little bit about broken backboards for a second and what makes them important? I just feel like it's a thing, broken backboards, and that has happened on multiple occasions and still at times still happens today. We are not discussing that enough as sports fans. What makes, let's talk about broken backboards. Why do you love them? What is it about a broken backboard that makes it so special? Dan, why don't you go first?
It represents the, like, it's like the Hulk. It is the rage and the angst, yes. the anger and everything that goes into, like, expressing your physical self in a physical space. It all comes out in one moment. This is how much you wanted to put that other dude into the ground, yeah, that you have shattered tempered glass like a windshield. You are basically a force of nature, a tree branch being thrown down through a vehicle in a windstorm, and you're doing that in basketball. I can't think of anything more dominant than that. And just to see it, like, you jump out of your seat because you can't help but physically react to it.
He's absolutely right. It's a very visual manifestation of your will during an athletic competition. I want this so bad. And you see it visually in a glass explosion. Oh my God. Paul, you go next. What is it about a broken backboard that makes it so special?
I think young men tend to have this sort of mischievous, destructive streak to them. I think we've all sort of experienced that in one form or another. And this is probably the ultimate expression of that, where you are just causing chaos for the sake of chaos, to relish in the confusion and, you know, shrieks of dismay that ensue immediately after your actions.
The chaos is something that I feel that I hadn't really considered until I started researching this episode. We'll get to a bit more of that chaos a little bit later, but I'm excited to talk about it. DA, a broken backboard. What sticks out to you?
It's just like a childhood fantasy. Like when you're playing basketball, you just always want to do it. And honestly, and for video games, like I grew up with the Nintendo generation. So it's like you wanted to always do it. So I think like NBA Live 95 is the first one where you could break a backboard. You know, an NBA Jam. I've never actually pulled it off, but I know you can break a backboard. So it was just, it was fans like that and dating Kelly Kapowski. It was like the two things that I just wanted to do the most.
Holy shit.
And it's the ultimate kind of mic drop. You know, it's always screwed up in movies. Like anytime a comedy, when they're like, let's have a basketball scene, it always ends really poorly with like a badly filmed broken backboard, like in The Cable Guy. You know, Jim jumps off of Jack Black's back. There's this movie called O with Mekhi Phifer. He breaks the backboard on a one-hand dunk and then throws the ball through the glass to make sure all of the glass breaks. And then he abuses like some little kid and like shocks Martin Sheen. You know, it's a really bad scene, but that's what it is. It's the ultimate mic drop.
It really is. It's the ultimate mic drop, and never really clearly put by saying it's a device that movies will use. Like, it's so mic drop-ish that movies go, we got to get out of this scene. What do? Let's have this dude wreck this hoop and get the hell out of here. Like, it does feel like it's just so visual. The thing for me that I thought about this, I spent so much time thinking about this, and I actually called First Ballot co-host, sometimes co-host, Michael Torpy, who could not come join us today. I started debating this with him because I wanted him to broaden my horizons on this, and he really, really did. Michael Torpy is fantastic. He made me realize when you dunk a basketball and the hoop breaks, Paul mentioned chaos. You dunk a basketball and the hoop breaks, it stops the game for everyone. Like, everyone there, the game stops. The players have to go rest. The coaches are like, what the hell do we do? The staff at the arena starts scrambling. It creates real chaos. It's and if you think about a dunk isn't something. It's a fantastic play. It's super exciting. It's a blast to watch. But it happens within a normal flow of a basketball game all the time. A broken backboard is essentially the field of play cannot contain what's going on in this game right now. The setting, the arena, what we've built, this court, it's not designed for what you're doing in this moment. What you've done cannot be contained by this thing that we've erected for you to play basketball here. The basketball that you're playing cannot be contained. It explodes, and it makes me go, what is the corollary? What's the comparison to a dunk breaking a backboard? I started thinking, the first thing I said was, imagine hitting a home run and the ball explodes. But that's not right. That's not right, because the ball doesn't explode in a basketball game. It has to be something where it's relatively routine, but it's so to the nth degree that everything must cease. It's really is that the field of play cannot contain what's going on in the game. And I just started going back and forth. The thing that Torpy posited was, if you're running so hard, you're digging, you're just hoofing it so hard that it tears up the field of play. And they go, well, you got to stop. This guy's running too hard. Or I was like, if you're boxing and you punch a guy and he flies through the turnbuckle, those are the comparisons. The ring like implodes. Like, imagine the tension of the ropes and they all like implode and fall into the ring. That's like the comparison here. That's what we're talking about. But it actually happens in NBA. It happens in basketball games. This has happened. It does happen. And no, we're not talking about it. We're not talking about how, hey, this court, this arena that they built, that they erected for this specific reason to play this game, cannot hold the game that's being played. That's how awesome it is.
I have never been more excited in my life. Now, after that, thinking about hitting something so hard that it explodes and implodes at the same time. And then we're going to get to talk about a bunch of these. Neil, what do I owe you?
We kept flipping through examples. I was like, well, what about tennis? And I'm like, it's not that you hit the tennis ball and you hit it so hard that it flies through your opponent's racket. That's not what's happening. It's as though you spike the ball. You served it so hard that the ball embeds itself into the clay court. It's like down. It's like stuck into the ground. And the guy's like, well, was it in? And it's like, of course it's in. Look, it's in the fucking dirt. It's within the lines. Like, there's no question. You don't need to go to the cameras. It's in the fucking dirt inbounds. And you're like, well, how do we get it out? And they're like, I can't get this ball out of the ground. It's in there so fucking hard. And the crew has to come out and like saw the top half of the tennis ball off and like repave the court and like repaint it. And like, that's how you solve the issue. That's like what is actually happening. That sounds absurd. That sounds like this insane thing that we're imagining, but that happens in basketball games. We're talking about four of them today. My God.
Has anyone here actually broken a backboard rim? I mean, not obviously not like a real court, but just anything. Play like lower goal, cheap basketball goals, anything?
There is the like breakaway rim door hang hoop, right? And yeah, so like every, I think, and which was the goal was you can't dunk on that without ripping it down. If you do that, you suspect and we don't trust you. So the whole goal of what you're trying to do and accomplish is to emulate this. But in terms of broken glass everywhere, people pissing on the street, you know, they just don't care. No, I've never personally been able to make that happen and affect that in a miniature or in a maxi way in my entire life. So, I mean, this is still aspirational for me.
Yeah. And I that's, you know, someone said the ultimate fantasy. You're using the word aspirational. It is. There's like a thing where if you like think about this thing, I don't think there's a guy on the planet that doesn't want to rob a bank and or try to rob a bank and try to break a backboard. Like, it's just like a thing that all guys, and I'm not proud of this. I think this is part of like the toxic masculinity thing. I'm not happy about this, but I can admit that this is woven into my DNA. I want to break a backboard. I want the shot.
I can proudly brag. I actually have broken. It was on a 9.5 goal. Nobody believes that shit. It was like a neighborhood goal.
Get the fuck out of here, you liar. Seriously.
No, I'll tell you the funniest thing.
You goddamn liar, David.
The rim, it didn't break off, but it bent totally down. And then this lady who actually lived in the neighborhood, because me and my friends didn't live in a neighborhood, she actually came down there and said, people keep breaking these rims. And she's like, I don't even know how people are getting, you know, jumping that high to do it. But the funny thing, it was at like 9 foot. It all I could think was, well, of course I'm lying. I was like, yeah, I don't know how anybody could ever reach that rim. But I was like, why don't you put it at 10? Because then people like me who can't dunk on 10 wouldn't be over here dunking. Because that used to be a big thing, is everybody would drive around looking for low basketball goals.
Right.
Just so we could dunk on it.
A little bit of vandalism.
Feels like a honeypot situation. Perhaps there was, you know, it was at 9 to try to lure you into some kind of larger
trap. Yeah. That's very funny. Entrapment. Wait, David, you bent the rim, but did the backboard break?
No, of course not. Okay, all I did was I bent the goal down.
That's an important distinction here. And I'm setting up the rules for the conversation we're about to have. The rules, as we discuss the best, every panelist that's come here today has brought their favorite backboard breaking dunk. And that is the rule. The backboard must shatter. That does remove the two iconic Shaq dunks, which will probably have their own episodes on this podcast at some point or another. But those, the Shaq in the Meadowlands and the Shaq in Phoenix, the backboard did not break. So the glass did not shatter. Those are removed from this competition. Is that clear, everyone?
Yes, sir.
Okay, here we go. Each panelist will get the chance, unimpeded, to make their case using First Ballot Hall of Fame credentials. I then, as the host, I have done some additional research on each of these dunks. I know what everyone is bringing to the table. I might add some additional research. We'll go through these, and at the end, we'll all weigh in on which we think is the best and which of these do we believe belongs in the First Ballot Hall of Fame. Are there any questions, gentlemen?
Nope.
The first submission today will be made by national NBA reporter Dan Devine. Dan, the floor is yours to make your submission and make your case for the best backboard breaking dunk of all time. Here we go.
Thank you so much for ceding the floor to me and gentlemen for allowing me to be here today to speak with you. I want to take you back to January 25th, 1988. Let's go. American movie-going audiences were spellbound by Robin Williams' performance in Good Morning Vietnam early in its run atop the box office. Need You Tonight by NXS was pumping in every club through every speaker. Ronald Reagan was about to deliver the State of the Union address, and at Fitzgerald Fieldhouse in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Jerome Lane was about to make history. Big Monday, Big East, ESPN, ever heard of them? Pittsburgh versus Providence, a Big East clash early in the second half. Steal on the inbounds pass under the Providence basket. Pitt's out on the fast break. Point guard Sean Miller, who'd later go on to be a head coach, running the break. He has Demetrius Gore on the left wing, and he's got Jerome Lane on the right. Choices, choices, what do? I feed it to Jerome Lane on the right. He takes two steps. Oh my goodness, Providence guard Carlton Screen, all 6 feet of him, steps in to take the charge on the driving lane. Wrong choice, Carlton. Two steps in the air, right hand back. As soon as Jerome Lane jumps, Bill Raftery involuntarily yells, oh! The right hand goes back, thighs hit chest, tomahawk, ball through the hoop, rim immediately gives way into Jerome Lane's right hand. Backboard completely shatters as Carlton Screen hits the ground. Silence. Play-by-play guy Mike Gorman, later of the Celtics broadcasts, 7 seconds later goes, yeah! And then, only then, send it in, Jerome! Bill Raftery on every replay laughs. He can only laugh. The pure joy of I have just seen something I've never seen before. The game had to stop for 32 minutes. To your point, Neil, when this stuff happens, the world stops the game.
That's right.
They have to go find a replacement rim somewhere, a replacement hoop somewhere else in the arena. It had no shot clock. They were prepared for this. It was like something they would use for summer camp. Jerome Lane finishes with 17 points and 17 rebounds. Pitt destroys Providence 90-56. And later in that game, or later, an oral history of this play goes up on a 2010 ESPN page 2 by Patrick Ruby. And Providence guard Eric Murdoch, who went on to play 9 years in the NBA, said, "It's the greatest dunk I've ever seen in my life. I feel for my man Paco Screen. I was hanging out with him recently. Obviously, that didn't come up. He was trying to take a charge, and Jerome broke the backboard on his head."
Oh, my God.
Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you, send it in, Jerome.
Holy shit. That's why we had Dan Devine on the show. That's why we did it. That's why I asked the guy to be on the show. Did you hear what he just did? Fucking A, man. This is going to be so much fun. How long are we? We're 20 minutes into this. This is going to never end. Buckle up. This is going to never end. Okay, I have so much to respond to. Fuck. I'm like so happy. The shot clock is just a major, major part of this. There's no shot clock on the replacement hoop that they bring out. It affects the rest of the game. This wasn't like just a mini stop down, and it was a stop down. It affects the rest of the game. The players are looking back over their shoulder to find the shot clock. Coaches are like, oh shit, there's no shot clock. It affects the rest of the game. It goes deeper. It affects ESPN. They go back to Stanford. Bob Lee is in the studio, and he goes, Jerome Lane just threw a giant wrench in the plans of a whole network. It affected in the entirety of ESPN. Whatever ESPN was doing after that, I think it was the second big Monday game, gets delayed. The commercials, when Chevy runs their commercial, is decided. It goes in the first quarter break because the maximum audience is there for this time. All that stuff is all decided. It's bought and sold and paid for. And everything changes because Jerome Lane shattered a basketball. It affected companies. Do you hear what I'm saying? It's just wild to think about. Here are some analytics, people of analytics. Pitt had just lost the 11 seed Oklahoma Sooners. I heard an interview with Jerome Lane. He talked about how mad he was about losing to the Sooners just before this. Some of that anger bleeds into this game, clearly. Pitt was up 6-5 with the time the dunk happened, very early in the game, which I didn't realize. 4.5 minutes in the game, 15 minutes, 24 seconds left on the first half clock. The delay was a 29-minute and 50-second delay.
Ooh.
I mean, that's a long goddamn time. Like, dudes are cold. Everything's stopping, like whatever. Like, I wonder, is there a world, I feel like this is not a giant leap, where Providence had a legitimate shot of winning this game? They were fired up and ready to go, and then they had to stop down for 29 minutes and 50 seconds, and it changed everything. Is that not possible?
The people on Providence in the aftermath stories that I read were like, the game was over at that point. Like, there was no, like, we were so fundamentally short-circuited by that play there was no coming back from it. They could have come back in 10 minutes or 4 hours, and it wouldn't have mattered. Providence was not going to win that game.
In case you're a real basketball, college basketball sicko, shout out to Nick Bernstein, official college basketball fan of the First Battle Podcast. The Pittsburgh Panthers finished the season 24-7, eighth in the country in the final AP poll. They were first in the Big East, but lost in the Big East tournament to Doug West's Villanova Wildcats. And then were eliminated in the round of 32 in the big dance. by Will Perdue's Vanderbilt Commodores. Some fun names to say there. Dan mentioned the call during his diatribe. Fantastic. Let's listen to it together.
Picked off by Miller. Goes ahead. Lane's on the other wing. He finds...
Oh! 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 Yeah! Sent it in, Jerome!
Oh! You also mentioned the laugh, Dan. The laugh there, and he does. He laughs on every single replay. The joy landed in that moment. There's a joy that's infectious. It affects everyone in the arena. It affected all of us that were watching it at home. I was watching this game live as a kid. The joy lands, and you can hear it throughout the rest of everything Bill Raftery says the rest of this game.
Yeah, it's why we watch, not specifically just for, you know, the shattering of backboards. Because, I mean, if you were watching only for that, you'd be disappointed in most games. But finding the thing, joy wherever it can be found. Can we reach out and grab something to care about to make us feel a little bit happier for a second, for a minute, for an hour, whatever, in the course of these athletic contests? This is when, and it's what makes the unprecedented or the unfamiliar so special to us. And it's why it lives in our memories and in our hearts so much. It's why we commemorate these sorts of things. It's why we talk about them 25, 35 years later. It's why they go up in plaques on walls in hallowed institutions like the First Ballot Hall of Fame. There's so much to consider and to think about here. But I think all of it comes back to joy. It comes back to that feeling of, I might see something I've never seen before, and that's going to fill me up. And you could hear it just coming out of Bill Raftery. It was overflowing from him. And then that it's what makes that moment something to remember forever.
Here's the sound, the microphone off of the backboard. Here's the audio that ESPN played during the game. I mean, pretty goddamn good. Paul, as an editor, your opinion of the audio of the glass breaking there?
Yeah, I went back and watched the game footage of this. And when they came back and played this clean audio, I was like, well, that's awesome producing for one. And then I thought Stone Cold Steve Austin was going to come down. Because that glass break is just, it is electric. And it's incredible producing. And you could have a lot of fun with that because it's such a clean break. It's crackling.
Oh, yeah. That's Stone Cold ET. I mean, just a perfect setup for my Stone Cold ET audio there. Thank you so much for that, Paul. More stats. Here's a couple more stats from this. Jerome Lane finished 6 of 8 from the field, 5 of 6 from the line, 17 points total, 17 boards in 35 minutes. 17 and 17 in 35 minutes, and that dunk. Fucking pretty goddamn good. You mad?
You mad?
Dan, you mentioned Sean Miller, the point guard of Pitt turned University of Arizona, I think, head coach. Sean Miller said, quote, in my house, we call that the pass, which I love. But everyone else thinks of it as like to send it in Jerome Lane's dunk. And then Sean Miller refers to it as the pass. That's just good fun. And then the backstory, I saw a crazy backstory about this in some sort of article. The Pittsburgh coach Evans was trying to motivate Pitt before this game. Does anybody know this story? What I'm about to say?
I do, but only because of pre-production. So go for it. Yes.
Well, do you want to tell it? Do you remember the story? Do you remember the details?
It involved a starter's pistol. Is that right?
Yeah. He fired a fucking starter's pistol. He's like telling these guys, we got to get out and run tonight. And he fires a goddamn starter pistol in a darkened practice arena to get these guys going. That's a fucking blast.
Yeah. In the oral history that I mentioned earlier from Page 2, Pitt guard Jason Matthews said that in practice a few days earlier, coach had been telling Jerome to go to the basket stronger. And Paul Evans, the coach, said the way Jerome was, that was probably one of his thoughts going in. I'll show coach I can take it hard. Whether or not you needed a starter's pistol to get that kind of motivation, I don't know. But clearly saw a little bit of extra fire as he went up for the dunk.
I also read that Charles Smith, who was Jerome Lane's, you know, the former Nick, who I'm sure is near and dear to Dan's heart. Charles Smith also reportedly broke a backboard in the same season against Dwayne Shinsis.
Yeah, he dunked on the late great Dwayne Cincius when they played Florida, but he it was, I think, but didn't shatter this way. So that became a, like, I think, and Charles Smith then later said, "I loosened up the rim for you." Like, oh, come so on, man. Good. All right. Like, Charles Smith, how dare you?
The Charles Smith who couldn't make a layup in the most important game of his career.
How could you maybe go bend the rim against the Bulls, Charles? Could you maybe have used some of that rim bending talent in an important moment in my life, perhaps?
Let's go to the press conference next, credential the press conference. Any great quotes about this? I've got a good one. He's interviewed by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Jerome Lanis. He's interviewed by the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And here is that question.
I think a lot of people are wondering, did you ever do that again?
No.
Backboard, a game practice?
Never.
Never. Did you ever try?
Every time.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I will say, I want to add, because we talked about the joy of this moment, there's also some pathos to it, because A, he tried every time and never got to do it again.
Yeah.
And then let her be on this. So there's broken glass all over the place, right? And we're talking about, it's like coming out of guys' hair. It's all over the floor. They have to clean it all up. The glass from that backboard becomes like a collector's item for the fans, for the athletic department, for all the people who worked around the team. You know who never got a piece of that glass? Jerome Lane.
Oh my God. That's fantastic. I read the same thing, that a glass. There's a woman, her name is Connie Sukernek. Do you know this, Dan?
Go for it.
Connie Sukernek? I don't know. I'm butchering her last name. I apologize. Connie Sukernek, her husband apparently got some of the glass. Connie Sukernek, this is what Connie said. Quote, "He had it set in an antique 14 karat gold ring. He gave it to me right before the Big East tournament." That fucking kicks ass. If you take Jerome Lane's backboard glass and put it in an antique gold ring for your wife who also loves Pitt basketball, that kicks a fucking ton of ass.
I mean, it's putting all the rest of us to shame. It's really like you have to level up your gift giving game to a frankly impossible to reach level. But it's nice to know that love means that much to somebody out there.
Oh, my God. That gift either lands like a fucking perfect 747, like perfect fucking landing, or it's a goddamn atomic bomb. It's one or the other. Your wife either loves Pitt basketball and you're like, what a fucking glorious thing. Or it's like, what the fuck did you just give me? It's either incalculable its worth, or it's a piece of garbage. Fascinating move by Peter Sukernek. Again, I apologize.
I had a nickel for every podcast I was on where we said fascinating move by Peter Sukernek. I would have a shitload of nickels.
The other thing I wanted your opinion on here, Paul, was during the stop down, ESPN, because they're filling time, they've got 29 minutes and 50 seconds to fill time, they rerun a Jerome Lane mixtape set to Huey Lewis's Working for a Living. Do you have any thoughts on that mix?
I can't believe I missed that. And I'm disappointed I missed that.
Oh my God, it fucking goes hard.
That is the sort of song pairing that we could only dream of, really. And
that's the truth. You guys, it honestly kind of makes me think all of you guys at Dunkop and David, that you all kind of fucking suck ass, like, because you never put together something that even remotely, it doesn't even hold the fucking water of this fucking Jerome Lane fucking absolute dynamo.
Hey, real quick, kind of off topic story. We were talking about weird like song choices in mixes. So when the Detroit Pistons won a game last week, I was looking up, like, I was like, let me try to find some clips of when they won one of their championships. And on one of the VHS tapes, I don't remember if it was the first one or the second one, it ends with a montage to MC Hammer's Can't Touch This. And they actually had like every member of the Pistons like doing the chorus that You Can't Touch This.
Fucking, that's awesome. That's fucking rad. I love the time capsule-ish nature of these things. I like hearing Huey Lewis. I like hearing the fucking pianos and the horns he's got just blaring over fucking Jerome Lane getting rebounds. I didn't remember that Jerome Lane led the nation in rebounding the year prior. So like, he was a fucking absolute workhorse. So I appreciate him having this moment. He deserves it. Does anybody know? I both... I'm both astounded by the research that you've all done already and also don't want you to have done the research that I've done so that I can present you with this new thing that you're learning for the first time. Does anybody know where Jerome Lane went to high school?
I do not.
No.
No, I do.
St. Vincent, St. Mary in Akron, Ohio.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And unless LeBron James has broken a backboard, you have to say the greatest guy to ever play basketball, St. Vincent, St. Mary, who's also broken a backboard, is Jerome Lane.
That's a very interesting point because there is a guy named Gus Johnson out of Akron, Ohio, who shattered three backboards in the 60s. And it's crazy to think that we've got this backboard-breaking pedigree coming out of the same.
Fuck, that goes so hard. Can you imagine driving into – oh, my God, I'm so excited. Can you imagine driving into the city of Akron and it's like, welcome to Akron. We fucking house backboards in Akron. Like, that's what we do. We fucking birth and raise gentlemen who go on to absolutely destroy backboards. That sign fucking insane.
It makes me think that the entire city of Akron, Ohio might need to at some point come up for consideration for the first ballot Hall of Fame because it's like LeBron born here, Steph born here, backboard breaking capital of the world. Like what a better place.
Holy shit. That is a blast.
Throw Nate Thurmond and his arms in there as well. And it's almost a no-brainer.
I mean, come on.
I didn't
know
that. Nate Thurmond's from Akron, too. Just a picture of his arms, just a bunch of a fucking pile of broken glass. LeBron and Steph. God damn, Akron, salt of the earth. Well, let's go, Ohio.
There used to be a lot of rumors that Nate Thurmond was LeBron's dad. There's like obviously no connection, but people have tried to do it just because of the age and you know, they got the good genes.
Yeah, oh, that's a lot of fun to think about. Last X Factor here, Jeff Van Gundy and John Calipari, both assistants during this game. A lot of fun to think about. All right, that was a blast. That's a lot to think about. A fine, fine submission. It's time to move on. The next panelist to go, Paul from Dunk Comp. The floor is yours.
I want to transport back to Northeast Italy in 1985, near the Yugoslavian border.
Great thing.
And for good reason. I'm speaking about a dormant moment, a legitimately dormant moment, and maybe David can challenge this a little later on. But this backboard shattering moment was, I suppose, enjoyed by a capacity crowd, overcapacity crowd of 5,000 Italians. And then it disappeared. It was only murmured about in piazza, you know, old guys sitting around
piazza,
recounting something they'd seen
over a cappuccino
on one hot night. And the moment I'm speaking of is Michael Jordan's shattered backboard moment in August 1985, Trieste, in Carbola Stadium. And I think that the thing that has attracted me to this, amongst other things, is the fact that it was dormant. It was legitimately unearthed. It was, you know, this thing that no one knew about, and then suddenly it became ubiquitous. And Neil, you talk about the financial implication of these moments.
Yes.
With the Jerome Lane dunk, a very similar situation here, you know. I don't know exactly how this happened, but the footage emerges, Nike jumps on it, and they release shoe after shoe after shoe in this shattered backboard colorway. I'm talking the shattered backboards, the reverse shattered backboards, the shattered backboard 3.0s, the Air Jordan 1 low color variants, the Air Jordan 1 mids, the Air Jordan 31s come out in it, the Air Jordan 5s have got it. The Nike Booker 1s just came out with a shattered backboard colorway. There is no clear relationship between Devin Booker and the people of Trieste. But
there is now.
And not only that, the shoes went to auction at Christie's. They went for a record. They went for a record value at the time. The jersey soon followed months later. It went for some obscene amount of money. This moment generated so much wealth for somebody some 30 years after it actually happened. And the moment is this. Jordan is playing in a Nike exhibition match. He's doing a tour of Italy, and he also goes to the UK later on. He's spent a couple of days mixing up with Mike D'Antoni in Milan, and now he's
That's right.
And he's now in Trieste. I'm not sure he knows exactly where he is, but he's playing for the local team. He actually comes out and warms up for the opposition, which is Juve Caserta. He decides, no, I'm not going to play for them. Goes back to the locker room, changes into that famous black and orange jersey.
Gorgeous.
It is now famous, I'm sure. Yeah. It wasn't quite famous in 1985, but it certainly is a well-known colorway today. And 3 minutes 40 into this game, he catches the outlet pass, one dribble, a routine Michael Jordan tomahawk, the one that we've seen countless times, takes off from the dotted line, throws it down, gives it a little bit extra, and then bang, it is a snap, just explosion, as it's been described. And one thing that makes this moment special is it exemplifies the Jordan that we would come to know. This is before the full global Jordan phenomenon. I mean, he was certainly on the up. You know, he's just coming off Rookie of the Year here. But this is before the Jumpman logo is on shoes and clothes. This is before, obviously, Space Jam. This is before he dunks from the foul line in front of, you know, so many witnesses. But it is surgical. It is classic MJ. And I know MJ has been spotlighted on this podcast a number of times, and there might be a bit of fatigue here. But the way he executes this, the way he hits the dunk, the chaos ensues in his wake. He walks away a bit like a superhero, right? He's unscathed. He hits the deck. He walks away unscathed. His teammates come to check on him. He's like, no, I'm good, man. I'm good. And there are victims. There is some serious injury sustained by the people who had the glass shower on them. Tato Lopez.
Left in its wake, yes.
Tato Lopez, a Uruguayan player who just arrived to play for Juve Caserta a week earlier. He misses 2 to 3 months, you know, and the coach is not happy. He's got some serious damage to his arm. I think the other gentleman got off a bit more lightly, but missed 2 weeks. So it's crazy. It's early in the game. They head back to the locker room, and Jordan is told by someone, either who is running the event or is managing the stadium, that no more of that. Thank you for the rest of the game. So in an exhibition match, Michael Jordan is instructed, hey, you're not doing that again. No dunks, mate.
It's amazing.
And we might get to this detail a bit later. So I might spare you any more. But it is the Michael Jordan shattered backboard moment in Trieste.
A fan, incredible, fantastic job, Paul. This is a blast. I didn't know. I knew about the footage. I did a little bit more research. Let me add a little bit to this. I test, and anybody feel free to jump in here. I think words matter. An absolute storm of glass.
Absolutely.
It rains down in this clip, including on Tato Lopez. I read that Tato had an injured tendon in his wrist, I think. Needed surgery. Do you hear what I'm saying? The gentleman needed surgery for how fucking badass Michael Jordan was in that moment. Fuck.
If you talk about clean visuals, it looks like, now granted, I'm watching on like a, you know, 134p, you know, bit of footage here, but it looks like the entire frame is just cleared out. Yes. Like it is a clean break. All of the glass has come out. We are just left with a rectangle.
You're right. It's like when you watch somebody in a movie like break the window, the glass in a door or a car door, and then they clear out the thing so they don't get cut by it. You know what I mean? You like bash it in with the fucking heel of a gun, and then you use the gun to like rake out all the rest of the glass that might end up sticking you. This dunk, you know what's the truth? Hold on. Let me posit something. My brain's just spinning here. Let me posit something. That glass all being gone, does that not feel, you know what? The more I think about this, the crazier I'm getting. That is that is what happens to glass during a controlled detonation. Oh my God. It's that looks, make, would anybody stand to make any money if that glass exploded in such a fashion? Well, I happen to think that Nike might, who's just put out the Air Jordan 1 and he's a rookie and they're trying to get the word out in Europe. Is there any chance that that's a controlled detonation, David Ostramskis?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
No. All right, let's just move on. I can't imagine just risking, you're risking the life of Michael Jordan, like the athlete, by having something like that happen.
Fair.
So yeah,
that I'm going to say no.
Got to come in on the other side of this. You're risking the life of a bunch of Italian guys. Michael Jordan was fine. So, you know, maybe Nike might've had some pre-pro going on there. Maybe that's a glass proof suit. We don't know exactly what's going on with the tactical lining of his uniform. I'm not saying I wouldn't put anything past the folks up in the Pacific Northwest.
But you know, a funny thing about, you know, kind of stuff being staged, and obviously I don't believe the story either. But and since we're not going to, this dunk doesn't qualify. But you know when Shaq tore down the basketball goal in New Jersey, there was actually rumors that that was staged. Like there was actually, you could find articles where people were saying, because it was the end of the year, Shaq had this amazing rookie season, and they're like, yeah, let's just stage it somehow, which is just kind of ludicrous. But there are real articles that's
fantastic,
kind of pitched that.
That's fantastic. Here is a couple more things. Let me look.
Can we do you mad? Can we do you mad?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so there is an account in a book called Sogni e Canestri, I think it's called, by Roberto Grassi. And it's an account by one of the players who was there playing for Trieste. And he says that when Jordan was advised that he's not allowed to dunk anymore, he was apparently fuming all throughout the locker room, as you can imagine. So the actual guy who committed the dunk is also the guy who is you mad. Furthermore, I think the opposing coach, legendary coach, Tanjevic, who is a FIBA Hall of Famer, he was mad because he just lost Lopez,
right,
who he just acquired.
Right.
He was taking the game very seriously. Apparently, he went into a 1-3-1 zone to stop Jordan in an exhibition game.
That's so good. Holy shit.
So, yeah, there's a bit of your madness going on up there as
God.
Well, as well as the hysteria. But
I mean,
Dave,
a 1-3-1 is like a literal manifestation of you mad question mark. Like,
it really is. Graphically, if you put that. Holy shit. That is some fucking hardcore nerd shit you just said. I am eating it up hook, line, and sinker. I absolutely love it. But that is some hardcore nerd shit. But you're actually 100% right. A fantastic ad.
And that 1-3-1 story comes from the Trieste coach at the time, Pugliese. And I suppose the critical role that he played, as well as being the coach of Jordan that night, the next year he goes down south to Calabria and he coaches Jellybean Joe Bryant. And he talks about having a nuisance down the one end of his training sessions in an 8-year-old Kobe Bryant who wouldn't get off the court while he's trying to run his team down there. So the guy has seen a young Michael Jordan, execute some incredible feat. And then the next year he's seeing what would be the next Jordan, I suppose.
Holy shit.
Learn the game in Italy.
I love that there's so much like corny Italian basketball stuff woven into this story. It's like, of course he had to go play with D'Antoni before this. Like, of course. He's literally the only other fucking American dude in Italy playing basketball that any of us would know. So, of course, MJ goes and plays D'Antoni and then comes and breaks this thing. And, of course, that coach then goes sees an 8-year-old Kobe Bryant. Like, of course, because it's fucking super Italian corny basketball shit. A couple other things to add here. You mentioned Jordan being pissed off and Jordan being mad about not being able to dunk. Teammate Fabrizio Zarati said that Jordan, quote, Michael got really upset and kept saying, "What? No more dunks? No more dunks?" And then Zarate says, during the second half, he would just take off, put his arm into the basket, and let the ball go. Him being not allowed to dunk and them running a 1-3-1 is so fucking funny. Shit, man. Like, I was like sitting here going, well, the dunk that I'll lean away from inducting is the Trieste dunk. But the opposing coach running a 1-3-1, that will live with me forever. That is mine. I'm taking it with me. Thank you for adding that. Here's a couple other X factors. One of MJ's teammates on the Stephenel Club, JaVale McGee's father. Anybody know that?
Wow.
No.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I did not know that.
There's a story that Jordan, because Paul mentioned that Jordan suited up in warm-ups for the other team. I'm not fucking saying the Italian words that Paul was saying. Fuck that. Jordan suits up for the other team, changes into that Stephenel orange and black, and then plays the rest of the game. The rumor has it, I don't know whether any of this is true, but on that other team, the team that the jersey he took off and didn't play for was Oscar Schmidt, the Brazilian wow. superstar. And the rumor he has was. It, he MJ was. Wanted to play Oscar the entire game and like run him down.
Of course.
It's incredible. Oscar Schmidt was definitely on that Caserta team. And I asked this question of an Italian by the name of Francesco, who was in Trieste, and he confirmed that for me. Incredible. I think Jordan was hunting. You know, he wanted to play. He wanted to play against Oscar Schmidt.
The one last X factor before I'm going to do a little bit of devil's advocate work. The last X factor, Giovanni Marzini. I think he was an announcer. He's a television personality. I think he was announcing this game. I'm listening to Giovanni Marzini interviews on YouTube, and I'm holding my phone up to it with Google Translate on to get information. That's what I'm doing for you all that are listening to this podcast.
Journalism.
Giovanni Marzini says that Jordan was late to the game. Quote, he was tired the particular day in which Jordan asked, because Jordan asked to play golf. And then he was in one of the most famous restaurants in Trieste. He was in Venice in the morning in a delightful place in an open air street, and then asked in the afternoon to play golf. Given that the match was scheduled for 8:30 p.m., he was able to play his 18 holes after basketball. Golf was one of his passions. So Jordan is late to the game because he's in Venice eating lunch. Then he goes, plays 18 holes, and then he goes to the game. And that's just an amazing, like, of course, Michael Jordan was doing that all before this game. It's just fantastic Jordan stuff.
Hey, Neil, can we talk about that reporter that you just
please.
Mentioned? Yeah, so just back on the footage being dormant, I don't know, Dave, if you saw this as the godfather of basketball internet video, when you saw this footage, because my recollection is this only appeared on YouTube. The first time we saw it was when it hit YouTube maybe 15 years ago. And I ask this question because Neil mentions this Italian reporter who works for Teleguattro. And I'm convinced they have the whole game. You know, you watch their clips on YouTube. They have got the cleanest footage. They've got angles that no one else has. The game in full exists somewhere in the Teleguattro archives. And it hasn't come out, is my understanding.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I was thinking this the whole time. I was going to ask everyone, when is the first time you all saw this video? Because that's when I saw it in kind of the early days of YouTube. And like Dan, you mentioned, it was like the quality of it. I've never seen a high quality version of this, but I know it exists. And it's true. Yes. There's a whole game somewhere that they have.
Fuck. What a travesty.
Like, no, has anyone actually seen this before YouTube?
No. Yeah. No. The first time I would remember it is maybe something like 2008, 9, 10, somewhere around there where, like, you know, people would be sharing it on blogs. Like, that was where I was like, oh my God, I've never seen Jordan in that jersey. I've never seen any of this. And then, like, that we don't have an updated, cleaned up, you know, remastered version of this. And actually, if I'm being honest, so like the part of me that wants to see every pixel of this is like, God damn it. But the part of me that sees this and is like, there's some warmth. It's like listening to vinyl. There's warmth to this. It makes it of a time. It adds some like some warmth and some sheen to it. Yeah. Like, yeah, no, it is of that time and of that place. And you know what? You don't get to have more than this.
shit. Hold on. Give me the floor for 1 second. I am so thoroughly enjoying what all of you are doing. I can't describe to you. Dan, you keep doing this shit that's just making me a smile spread from ear to ear. This is the warmth and the idea that, no. I know you want more, but this is what I'm giving you. It's this, and the rest of it is mine. Like, think about some swarthy Italian guy that's like, no. That tape, buddy boy, is mine. That's mine. It's going to my kids. I'm taking it with me. You don't get that footage. It's mine. That makes me love this moment. Also, Paul, you mentioned this being on the border by Yugoslavia. That's the sort of specificity that is making this whole experience so enjoyable so far. I just want to thank all of you for doing what you're doing. I'm having a blast.
Quick comment about what Dan, you were saying. There's this appeal, this not having much of something. And it's kind of like almost like a statement about today's society that we have so much footage. We have so much evidence proof of everything. And it's sometimes like just having a photo or the short clip or honestly just stories. Like I've always said, like, we'll probably never really have legendary stories anymore because in the past it's like somebody would see one thing. And then it's like it turns into that game where when people repeat stories, things gets changed and it gets exaggerated and it creates this really amazing visual of this moment. But then if you actually saw the proof of it, you're like, it's not that spectacular. And that happens with sometimes we might see another angle of that dunk and it just might not be as good. I mean, I've seen some NBA plays where like if there was just one angle we always got. And then the NBA will end up releasing this other angle. And you're like, oh, Jordan really didn't jump that high on that play. It kind of, you risk the chance of like losing some of the, you know, your excitement over stuff, the more kind of evidence you get. So in a way, having the shitty quality one angle of that dunk might be the best thing.
That is your, by far and away, your most important contribution to this entire podcast, because I have referenced that 10 other times in 10 other episodes, the legend that everyone's got a camera, that there's a 50 million different angles and some of them are less impressive. I don't want it. I like it curated. I like the story given to me by professionals. It creates a legend that's mine. It's my story. It's my memory. It's my moment. And it's lost a bit more nowadays. I love that. It's, you know, you mentioned like moments and seeing different angles. I think about that Kobe Matt Barnes angle when whoever posted that clip, that overhead shot, I'm like, get that shit out of here, man. What are you fucking doing, man? Get that out of here. You're trying to take this moment down. This moment should live forever. You're trying to get the fuck out of here. Whoever posted that, mother effer, you fucking nuts. Crazy motherfucker. Okay, here we go. I'm so whipped up. I just keep swearing. I apologize.
No, but this is actually just such an interesting topic. The whole idea of really debunking myths by having more stuff.
Let me for a moment play devil's advocate. Next credential, devil's advocate. The Trieste dunk and the shatter, storm of glass. It happens on the recoil of the rim. Points deducted. It does not happen when Jordan stuffs the ball. It happens as he lets go and the rim snaps back and then the glass blows. Listen, you've tried to say that my controlled detonation theory is bullshit. I'm not certain yet. I'm not certain that's the case. But I will say that a Jerome Lane boosts that thing, glass goes. Jordan lets the hoop go and then it shatters. It's small deduction there. Maybe that matters here at the finish line. Is anybody with me?
I in self-interest, yes, I think to deduct multiple points. Let's get Jerome up there. But there's also an aspect of like, it's almost like the basket couldn't believe Michael Jordan was doing that to it. Like it could see the future and it's like, I'm going to be the thing that he does this to. Right. Like, I've been touched by the hand of God here. And then it takes a second.
There's
a way of viewing it that way, but I agree. Jerome Lane's much more sudden, immediately explosive. Let's not forget that.
All fair points. Fantastic. Let's move on. By the way, I know what this is now, Rob. This is a two-part episode. That's exactly right. A two-part episode. A lot like the idea that a shattered backboard is emblematic of the fact that the court erected to play this sport cannot contain the awesomeness of the sport that's going on, we are shattering the single episode podcast format of this show. The grandiosity of the conversation we're having cannot be contained within your typical one episode podcast format. You know what I'm saying? You got to come back next week for part two of the shattered backboard debate. Here's a little tease of what's to come.
So for him to break it like on television on his first try, he said, "I think this is the basketball god's way of letting earthlings know about the power that I'm coming with."
Fuck, man. Just
an amazing quote.
You cannot show this clip to any mother and not have them gasp deeply. It's a deep, deep, real gasp.
Well, you know, what fresh hell strides toward us? This is incredible.
It's perfect.
I want the gentleman with us today to tell us which of these dunks belongs in the First Ballot Hall of Fame.
I believe if one of these four, if only one of these four is going to go into the rafters, I think it should be.
We need your help. Let us know what you think is the greatest shattered backboard dunk. You're going to decide that online. We're going to put out a poll. It's going to be a big deal. Tell us what you think about the importance of shattered backboard dunks. Do you have a shattered backboard story? Let us know. I'm going to be reading the best comments, playing the best voice notes next week, top of the episode. Come back. Credits. Robbie Bobby Arucci, Jessica Sang, EJ Capasal. That's the team. Three Asian people, one white guy. Rhythm J makes all the beats for the show. Follow him on social at Rhythm J. And please come back next week for more First Ballot. Hey, man, this is going to be so much fun.